You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you. Hope you're going to have a good day today on this Thanksgiving Eve, or Misgiving Eve. Let's be real. Let's be appropriate. Misgiving Eve. And that you're going to have a good time with family and friends. And hopefully, too, that the weekend is a positive event. Everything goes well. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. When you click on that, there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, this program, and excuse me, I'm sorry, family. Let me clear my throat. Yeah, let me clear my throat. This program and where's those two other programs? I gotta get that. You know, I just gotta get it together, fam. You know, sometimes you just don't have it together. You know, I gotta get it together because there's two programs that we have here just signed up. Yeah, African Perspectives every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and all times of Eastern times. And yeah, on Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Friday, and then on Sunday at 7 p.m., yeah, I lost that paper. Didn't pay attention. You know what I'm saying, family? I didn't pay attention. I lost that paper with the information on it. And I'm going to find it. And what I'll do is I'll find it and report it and give it to you in the break time. That's what we'll do. Yeah, okay? Yeah, let's do that. Instead of wasting time. Yeah, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. All right. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. November 26th. Love makes your soul crawl out from its hiding place. Zora Neale Hurston. Our women are our healers. And because of this divine quality, they are abused. In reality, where control over others and unrestrained emotional, physical, and verbal violence against others is an obvious indicator of that control, those who move with their hearts become the easiest and most desired victims for unself-confident predators. Often such domination is obsolete. Yorugu are the ultimate dominators, masters in the art of sadistic manipulation. Historically, in response to their Asili imperatives, they have made a cultural and social habit of ranking personal prestige and power based on who most effectively dominates others among their group and others while remaining the least victimized and controlled. Being the most targeted by this violence, African women have tried to protect their souls by hiding their hearts behind shields of indifference. They are living lives of apathy and needlessness as they place an inordinate amount of energy into suppressing their femininity and the nurturing talents no one else possesses so well. Yet femininity is beauty, and beauty is hard to hide. Our women's essence, as spiritual beings who exist to heal, finds ways to reveal itself even in the darkness of evil places full of malevolent people who have no love of life. So even though they are physically the most beautiful to ever walk this earth, their beauty is not the only reason Yorugu men want to possess them. They want to own and control that healing power. African men must make this a non-option. We must give them the healing love they deserve and make them know their immeasurable value to us. Ashe, please, brothers, come together and protect our women. Affirm, I have stopped hiding my love for Africans. Affirm, I have stopped hiding my love for Africans. November 27th. People without knowledge of their culture drift about like corks on the ocean. Timothy Colander. Wherever we see individuals who gain enormous ego gratification from creating chaos on the front line at every opportunity, we see individuals, often the same ones, over and over again, most often doing absolutely nothing concrete for African people themselves, throwing innuendo, lies, and conspiratorial connections from behind a keyboard into a social media looking for fights that will engage more people, improve its ratings, and distract warriors from their responsibilities to correct this evil, regressive, counterproductive reality. Whether conscious or not, these individuals are instigators, frantically creating chaos on a front line that already has enough destabilizing issues. In their historical ignorance, they would have us believe that they are simply messengers in the democratizing question everything process, where revolution is ongoing, an argument in the tradition of a thesis, antithesis, and finally a synthesis, which leads to another, more progressive debates. But even if this were democracy, that is not really why they do it at heart. They do it because of the indescribable joy that creating, fueling, and observing infighting brings them, and an enormous sense of elevation they get simply from bringing others down. Affirm, I am anchored in a deep knowledge of our culture. Affirm, I am anchored in a deep knowledge of our culture. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Ah, brothers and sisters, that's right, it's the day before the day of misgivings. That's coined by our good sister Marimba, Mama Marimba, Ani. You know, I knew for many years that the day of misgivings
was problematic for indigenous people. Didn't know that as a child, of course. You know, didn't see that on television, didn't read it in any books that I knew, especially in school, because, you know, because what you wanted to believe, just like, you know, they had you dress up either as an Indian, or a pilgrim, you know, put a buckle hat on your head or put a feather, one feather up, and, you know, yeah, the indoctrination and the belief that, you know, the Europeans who came here had every right to come here. You can have a right to come. You have every right to go someplace and to go to someone's land. You have their right, but you got to respect that. Just as right now, as these crackers are talking about exporting hundreds of thousands, if not whatever, yet they came here and they took this. They came here not to trade, not to bargain, not to barter, not to buy. They came here to take. Indigenous people suffered tremendously from the diseases, just like they did the same thing. And you got to understand that when they came here, it wasn't like they had the disease in a petri dish and then opened it up and, you know, or scattered it or brushed it on something or in the food. No, the people came here, they were diseased. They were diseased. And we caught them. And, well, indigenous people caught them. And we caught them, too, on the continent. And caught them here when we were brought here. Because our DNA is strong, we withstood it to some degree. Some of us. Most of us. Let's be real. But not so much the indigenous people. They suffered many losses, you know. So this myth was created. This myth was created. According to the myth, the pilgrims left England on the Mayflower in search of religious freedom. Although the settlers at Plymouth did include the separatists who wanted a break away from the Church of England, other members of the community had traveled to this so-called New World for largely financial reasons rather than religious reasons. Yeah. The myth continues saying that once the Mayflower landed in Cape Cod Bay, the men on board drew up the Mayflower Compact, an agreement that all men aboard the ship agreed to follow. This had been cited as the first democratic government document which would become the United States and supposed basis of the American Constitution over a century later. Once the English colonists landed, the myth says that they found the local indigenous people, primarily the Wampanoag, with whom they had a warm, friendly, and faithful relationship with the settlers, requiring the Wampanoag assistance to survive, which they provided out of the goodness of their hearts. In truth, Wampanoag leader was one to initiate contact with these so-called folks in 1621. After a time of weary avoidance, the Wampanoag had negative experiences with European fishermen, some of whom had captured the Wampanoag and made them captives, made them slaves. The relationships were political rather than being based on interpersonal relationships with the Wampanoag, hoping an alliance with the settlers would allow them access to trade and help them fight against this another people, the Negaseti. This alliance was also not universally approved of, with individual Wampanoag challenging the idea that the alliance was a good idea. The pilgrims primarily maintain an alliance with the Wampanoag in order to have access to resources. The winter of the late 1620 in early 1621 was brutal, with many of them dying. The settlers were able to separate for the next winter with the help of Tisquantin, what they called him, Squanto. They called him Squanto in the myth. But what is usually not mentioned is that he had been captured. Squanto had been captured in 1614 and been enslaved. He had been a captive in Spain. He made his way to England and learned English before returning to North America in 1619. When he returned, the tribe had been ravaged by smallpox. The settlers, the intruders, the colonizers had built Plymouth on the area where his village had been, as the land was already cleared. His village was there. They were gone. Many people died. According to the myth, the first Thanksgiving was celebrated for 3 days with local indigenous people in attendance as guests, as well as giving thanks for each other's presence and contributions. Historians are unsure if the settlers invited the Native Americans. Some accounts suggest that the Wampanoag men came to the settlement after hearing celebratory gunfire, fearing the settlement was under attack. Other historians think the presence might have been a coincidence with Wampanoag leader happening to visit the settlement on diplomatic grounds that day. Or the Wampanoagan, it's a tough name, family. Wampanoagan people had been planting near the settlement that day. They're planting vegetables and so forth. Further aesthetic renditions tend to feature only a few native in attendance, when in truth, the event had about 90 Wampanoagan visitors compared to the 50 settlers. It is true that both the English and the Wampanoagan people ate together, and they were prayers and not games. I doubt it. I dismissed the whole damn thing. Because what I know is from the Corn Festival, you know, how I learned about this was many years ago when I was on the fire department in the 70s, late 70s, 78, 77, 78, something like that, maybe late 70s. And the Milwaukee had two newspapers. They had a morning newspaper, the Sentinel, and they had an evening newspaper, the Journal. And then, of course, it combined the Journal Sentinel. Now, I don't even know if the paper's around, because a lot of papers, just like the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, you know, many people don't subscribe. They got the internet. So anyway, in the evening paper, you know, I read the paper a lot back then. I didn't subscribe to it. I didn't take them home, because on my day, I work one day and off 2 days. So when I came in that morning after I did my preaching stuff, bringing my clothes up, testing my mask, all that kind of stuff, sat down and having a cup of coffee, I would read the newspaper. Say, for instance, it's like today, it's Wednesday. I would read the newspaper of yesterday, because I would read the other paper going off of work. So I work Sunday, off Monday and Tuesday, work Wednesday. So on Sunday, I read that paper that morning. Monday, I read that paper. So on Wednesday, I read the paper from Tuesday. So you got what I mean. Yeah, good. So that evening's paper, the Journal, had an insert, a supplement called the Green Sheet, where they had all kinds of the, you know, Miss Landers and all kinds of other puzzles and so forth, and the comics. And on the front of it, they always dealt with a subject. This time, for whatever reason, they dealt with the real meaning of Thanksgiving. And they talked about how the settlers, how they got together when there was a festival, and they vamped on the Pequot, I believe it was the Pequot in Indians in northern, in the New England area, which is now New England area, and vamped on them while the men were out hunting, and they killed the people. And then when the men returned, they killed them. And they went back to their settlement and prayed and gave thanksgiving. They gave thanksgiving. And that's what they did continuously. The myth is that the event of Thanksgiving was something that was amenable between the Wampanoag, Pequot, or whoever else. And it's not true. Yeah. The myth does not often explore the aftermath of the 21 event, supposedly making simply that the friendship between the colonists and the Native Americans led to a peace that allowed the English colonies in New England to continue to thrive. In reality, the alliance between the Plymouth settlers and the Wampanoag would fully fall apart in the years following the 1621 feast, if it really happened, culminating in the 1630s Pequot Wars and the 1670s King Philip's Wars. In 1623, the Plymouth colonists held a day of Thanksgiving in response to the rains after the drought and the arrival of Captain Miles Standish, making this the first day of Thanksgiving identified as such in the primary of the Plymouth colony. Miles Standish. I used to go to the Subway sandwich called Suburbia, and one of their subs, the turkey sub, was called the Miles Standish. Yeah, man, tell you. And so, no, it didn't happen that way. No, it didn't. And let me say this, because I know tomorrow and people are on the road. People are in the air on the road. And in fact, more people are on the road at this time than ever because the fuel is less. There's no worry about the pandemic, none of that stuff. And so many people are traveling for 50 miles or more to visit relatives and be there all the way to this weekend. Maybe returning back Sunday, maybe returning back Monday, you know, be with family and friends. I remember when I first moved here to Atlanta, and my daughter, my oldest daughter, her friends, I really enjoyed them, you know, and they would invite me to their, you know, dinners and so forth, and that was great. And being the elder, they asked me to do a prayer, and I did a prayer, and at that time, there was a pipeline coming out of Canada into the Dakotas, you know. And they wanted to run that pipeline, the oil company wanted that pipeline through Bismarck, something, you know. And they said, no, we don't want a pipeline through here disrupting the land and so forth and so on. And they diverted the pipeline into land that was already earmarked for indigenous people, has sacred land. And they just did it. They didn't ask the people. They didn't say, well, let's powwow. I don't mean to be, you know. Let's talk about it. Maybe find a way to compensate you or whatever. No, they didn't. They just ran the damn pipeline through there. And so the indigenous people had a constant protest. I don't know if you remember this. Had a constant protest. And the authorities came in and they started to, you know, battle with them, throw water cannon on them, spray water. And it's this time of year, of course. It's cold. And they spraying water cannon, you know. I tell you, man, these people ain't nothing nice. You know that. They ain't nothing nice. So we call them Urugu. They ain't nothing nice, these son of a. So anyway, I made mention of that and how the indigenous people felt about it. You know, and I saw some faces. You know, I know it's supposed to be what you say is a good time. You don't want to hear about, you know, massacres. You don't want to hear about the thievery and the death and all of those kinds of things. But that's what it is. That's what this whole thing is. The theft of land. The killing of people. The bringing us over here to work this. Stolen land. African people working on land that was not even the persons that brought us here. And since that time, this is a day of mourning for the indigenous people. This is a day of mourning. This is not a day of celebration, merriment. This is a day of mourning. And of course, it's, I think Lincoln made it the fourth Thursday of the month, you know. And of course, the next day begins Black Friday. And we'll talk about that too on this Friday. The next day begins the shopping, the biggest commercial holiday in the history of Western society. The reason why they call it Black. See, they just started calling it Black Friday. That's something for those of us who are on this call. You know they didn't call it. Because not to call something black was demeaning and derogatory. The European utilized that black as the opposite of white, of being pure, of being right, righteous and loving and all that of bull. Black, scourge, you know. So no, Black Friday basically deals with bookkeeping. Yeah, you want to be in the black. You don't want to be in the red. That means you didn't do good. It's a deficit. Black. You made it. Surplus. So forth. Black Friday. So the businesses had a chance to get into the black by you spending your dollars with them. You and many, many, many others are spending your dollar with them so they can make money. That's what Black Friday's all about. And that's why they had the nerve. Well, Caucasians always have the nerve, the mitigated gall. But they wouldn't have called it that way in the 60s. No, they didn't call it Black Friday in the 60s. I don't think they didn't call it Black Friday until the 80s. I don't think they call it Black Friday in the 70s. They definitely didn't call it in the 60s and prior, because the connotation of black was associated with nothing good, evil, and sinister. But now, of course, it's Black Friday. We'll talk about that on Black Friday. Yeah. So, yeah, became the fourth Thursday of the month. And other things that they've done. Yeah. I'm gonna get out of this violent settlement. Yeah. And get to the misgivings. Mama Marimba Ani, my dear friend, my good sister, beautiful woman. I didn't know that she was here. I did come here for a conference and saw her here and talked to her. I didn't know, didn't remember, not that she was here. I know she was in New York, but she had moved here prior to me coming here. And just been a, she's a Jagna, no doubt about it. And to many of us, we have much honor and love and respect for her. And of course, to me, her seminal work, Urugu, is the, her book is the Bible for me. I can't speak about others, but to me. Yeah. New terminology that she it came up with, terminology. It's a thick book, but it's, I mean, it substantiates who they are. In fact, Urugu is a incomplete being. That's why we call the Caucasian Urugu, because he's incomplete. He hasn't gone through the whole gestation period. He's incomplete, and he hates himself, and he hates all those who are not him, all those who are not like him, and envious and so forth. You know, let's be real. Urugu grew up in an environment that was very harsh, with very little resources at all. You know? Well, even the Greeks and the Romans, same thing. They went out to take people's stuff. Now, the Greeks studied in Kemet. They called it Egypt. They studied there. You know, in fact, one of the early philosophers, Socrates, having studied at the feet of African people, understanding some of the things that we had done and could do, wanted to enlighten Greece with this information and to the students, the young people. Well, they thought he was corrupting them. And they made him drink hemlock, made him drink poison, killed him. Plato and others, they saw what was happening and then disappeared. They disappeared in Africa. They disappeared in Kemet, what the Greeks had called Egypt. And they studied at the feet of African people. And of course, African civilization had been declining consistently, and when the Greeks came in, they took over. And a lot of times they put their face on it, as well as the Romans later who came in, put their face on it. That's why today, what you see, Arabs swept all across North Africa from from the Iberian Peninsula. Well, the Iberian Peninsula is west, but from the so-called Middle East going all the way west. And the people who are there now are not, I repeat, the people who are there not, those who are in control, the dominant population, are not the original people of that land. And I tell you, I've been watching this Facebook piece of this mother who always claims that it is theirs. It is not black. He's just like Dr. Zaid Hawass. Dr. Zaid Hawass is probably the man you've seen if you've watched documentaries on Kemet and, you know, talking about the society, the structure, the mummies, architecture, and so forth. Zaid Hawass, who adamantly says it was not black. Yes, it is in Africa, but it is not black. Zaid Hawass. Smack this. And so, this constant displacement of indigenous people, especially those just like here, you know, and I admire many of the indigenous people who maintain culture, even though they're put on the reservations, had many problems because of it. The alcoholism, the other issues, diabetes and so forth that they suffer from. And I'm not just talking about, you know, then the Trail of Tears. A good one to see on that, of course, is Exterminate All the Brutes. What's the brothers from Haiti? Oh, I can't remember his name, but Exterminate All the Brutes is another documentary. That came on It came on HBO. And I'm quite sure you might be able to find it. Go to YouTube, just like the documentary I'm always pushing and promoting, which, of course, is Great Pyramid K, 2019, of how the pyramids were built and who built them. You know, Great Pyramid K, 2019. And they talk about the Trail of Tears. You know, when the European, Andrew Jackson, that asshole. Man, there's been a bunch of people who have been led this country. So Trump just follows all the others. All of them. Bush, both Bushes, all of them. You know? So it's no surprise. I mean, you may be a surprise to many of us that this kind of mindset, this kind of mentality would still be happening. So vicious and so reactionary. Many of the people who he has tabbed to work in his administration, totally unqualified, some very demonic. That cat for Homeland Security is a mother. Oh, man. We'll see what happens on this, won't we? Yes, we will, family. We will. We'll see what's happening. And so, Marimba Ani wrote this. This is she updates it in every year and brings it back out. And I appreciate it. I love her for it. And this is the Misgivings, an African-centered, indigenous-centered view. A group of European scavengers, many of whom have been imprisoned or homeless in England, arrived in what they called New England in 1620. They first lived on Turtle Island. Half of them died within a few months. Squanto of the Pequot tribe, Pequot people, who had been enslaved by the Europeans and had been taken to England, spoke English, formed a close relationship with these pitiful migrants. He taught them how to grow corn and to fish, how to prepare certain foods and other survival skills. The Yurugu people, saw Squanto as an instrument of their god, to help his chosen people. And as she writes that, let's be real. They felt that what they did here was God's blessing. And that they had manifest destiny. It was their right and privilege to sweep all across this land and take it as it did. You see the boundaries today. You see everything you see. You see Canada. You see Mexico, the Spanish. In other words, they used them. They used Squanto. To them, he and his people were heathens and savages. The worldview of the indigenous people, much like the African worldview, taught them to give freely to those who had nothing. Squanto is said to have negotiated a false treaty between the nearby Wampanoagan and the colonizers. The leader of the Wampanoagan nation, Mishequat, donated food stores to the struggling colonialists, the colonizers of Europe. In 1621, having survived a hard winter due to the help of the Wampanoagan, the Europeans celebrated, as it was their custom to have, a Thanksgiving to their god. No Wakanagan or members of any other indigenous nations were invited to the celebration. And yet they came and supplied most of the food. In return for helping them to survive, the Urugu decimated the Wampanoag through disease, treachery, and slaughter in the years which followed. By 1637, as the Europeans were feeling successful, more powerful, and in control of their newly acquired territory, an expedition was sent to Connecticut near Gorton. Over 700 indigenous people, the Pequot, were celebrating their yearly harvest, the annual Green Corn Festival, when they were taken by surprise by these invaders. Their men were shot and clubbed to death, while their women and children were burned alive. Winthrop, the first governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony, proclaimed a day of thanksgiving, saying that they should thank God for destroying the savages to make way for a better growth. Quoted in the work of Cotton Mather's, they should thank God. What followed constitutes one of the most vicious records of continuing massacres of indigenous people of this land now known as America. It became the custom of Caucasians of the Urugu to follow such massacres with a thanksgiving. Rewards would be given to those, you remember, I don't know if you remember, probably do, they would scalp, and they thought that scalping, see, Caucasians did scalping, but they told the indigenous people in fighting others to scalp them, and the more scalps you get, the more reward you will get. Yeah, scalping. Which followed constitutes one of the most vicious records of continued massacres of indigenous people of the land now known as this. It became the custom of Urugu to follow such massacres with a thanksgiving. Rewards would be given to those who returned with skulls or indigenous peoples to encourage their slaughter with scalps. In 1863, it was decided to celebrate only one day of misgivings proclaimed by Abraham Lincoln. At a later period, the fourth Thursday of November was chosen by capitalists to maximize the shopping until the biggest commercial holiday in the history of the Western world. Recently, it had been moved to the third Thursday in November. Now, see, they, you know, so they can have more shopping days, but it's back to the fourth. It's the fourth Thursday. In 1970, at the 350th anniversary of the landing of these people, a leader of indigenous people prepared a speech in which he told the true history of Plymouth and berated Urugu people for robbing the graves of their Wampanoag. The officials of Massachusetts did not allow them to make the speech. Every year since then, indigenous people of this land have looked upon whatever Thursday it is in November, which is the third, I mean fourth Thursday, that Caucasian people designated as their Thanksgiving as a day of mourning. This is, tomorrow is a day of mourning. Check out Russell Means, look Russell Means, Susan Bates, Jacqueline Keeler. African people should understand that we are at war with the same forces that caused the murder of millions of indigenous people of America and the decimation of their nations. We must not be allowed, we must not allow ourselves to be distracted with the celebration of their demise while the same enemy is busy stealing our homeland. Right now, America was built by stolen labor on stolen land. Brother D, this is the legacy of Europeans in this land. America was built by stolen labor on stolen land. Taking without thanks, taking without giving is exploitation. Change is not easy. We are used to celebrating with our families on this day. It is always good to come together and to share a meal with each other. But do we have alternatives? And we always need to be in the process of growth. Growth makes change necessary. We can change a little at a time, remembering that our goal, brothers and sisters, I hope you understand what our goal is. I try desperately to say it all the time. Our goal is African sovereignty. We need independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. The motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. The greatest thing that can happen for African people to solve the problems of African people globally, wherever we are, is functional unity. African sovereignty. Number one, when you are with your family on tomorrow, November 28th, 2024, take a moment to remember and talk about the true meaning of this day. And I know that this so-called holy day, holiday, you know, y'all may not do that, but y'all, you know, enjoy yourself. Be real. Don't get stupid. Don't get stupid with each other. Number two, we don't have to contribute to the capitalist profit-making mania during the weekend following misgivings organized by the enemy's large conglomerates, which encourage us to spend money that we don't have for things we don't need. Don't shop. Number three, make the sacrifice of fasting that day. Yes, it would be a challenge, but you can still enjoy your family and at the same time identify with those who were exploited, murdered, and raped of their resources, as we have been and continue to be, that we have been raped and exploited. This is not a cause for celebration. Number four, August 31st is the Universal African Sovereignty Day, on which the African world nation gives thanks together for the gift of having been born African and for the sacrifice that have been made for us by our ancestors. It is a process long overdue. Let's begin it now. Brothers and sisters, world African sovereignty and victory. Mama Marimba Ani. Yeah. A day of misgivings. Yes. We're going to take a break. When we come back on a break, the phone lines will be open. Something special today. Scene where Harry Williams passed the other day. Harry Williams was a member of Bloodstone. I see where Charles McCormick passed a couple years ago, member of Bloodstone. These were the two main leaders of Bloodstone. McCormick was the brother who often wore a hat, a sailor hat, a regular hat with Bloodstone on it. You know, he often wore a hat. Harry Williams was large. In fact, he was big, you know. When everybody else was still looking dressed, man, he'd throw his shirt out, might even take his shoes off. He'd get comfortable. But man, could he sing. Loved him. Yeah. I'd love to play a medley, but I'm going to play two songs. Of course, Natural High, which features Charles McCormick. A Long Way Back, which features Harry Williams. Bloodstone was one of my favorite groups coming up. They're out of Kansas City. They formed in 1962. Wow. In Kansas City, Missouri. They called themselves the Sincere's at that time. In 67, the band was backed by and toured with large Kansas City horn band known as the Smokin' Emeralds and performed in various venues and with Motown-style review, which drew large crowds at the venue and called the Palace in Westport District of Kansas City. By 1971, the band consisted of Melvin Webb on drums, Roger Durham, who passed in 73, on percussions, Charles Love on guitar and vocals. And he was born in Kansas City and died in 2014. Charles McCormick, who was born in Kansas City, and he died 2 years ago, April 12, 22. Harry Williams, born on Juneteenth Day in 44 and died in 24, 80 years old. Yep. What a group. After learning to play their respective musical instruments, they moved to L.A., where they met their prospective managers, George, European Jew, George Bronstein, and Ronnie Malin. The band also placed its drummer, Melvin Webb, with Eddie. It placed its drummer, Melvin Webb, with Eddie Summers, and a resident of L.A. The managers decided to change their name from the Sincere's to Bloodstone. Later, the group traveled to London, where they signed a recording contract with Decca. The original members were Charles McCormick, Willis Darren, Charles Love, and Harry Williams, and Roger Durham, and Eddie Summers. The first album was titled Bloodstone, whereas there were two singles released simultaneously called That's the Way We Make Our Music and Girl, You Look So Fine. Written and arranged by Eddie Summers, the newest member in the second album, Natural High. The second album, Natural High Family. That's right. Reached the U.S. R&B top 10. The album was written by various members of the group Bloodstone, with the single Natural High reaching number 10 on the pop charts. It received blanket airplay in Europe. It reached number 40 in the U.K. It was bad, wasn't it? Man. Bloodstone's other hits included Never Let You Go. Tough. Outside Woman. Outside Woman. Yeah. Yep. The Little Lady Bloodstone was instrumental in Black Rock. Yep. Bloodstone performed with Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield, Impressions. Their 73 album Natural High, produced by Mike Vernon, sold over 1 million copies. Yes. And was awarded a gold disc. Bloodstone also starred and wrote and performed in 6 songs. Ah, man, they were tough. So we're going to play some Bloodstone. Hope you enjoy it. Yep. You and me, girl. Oh, yeah. Go a long way back. Yeah. Well, one of my favorites is Go On and Cry. Yep. Go on and cry, my son. Cry till your tears are done. I know it's hard for you to see that it really wasn't meant to be, but you'll find love again. Maybe the next time you'll win. That's a great song. Oh, Bloodstone, seen it many times. In fact, my daughter went to school in St. Louis, and one of her friends worked at the, I think it was the Palace, one of the majors, just like the one you have in Atlanta, probably in your town, that just like the Riverside in Milwaukee, that is a theater, but they show, they have live shows, nice big stage, nice big venue, and Bloodstone was the main group, but there was a stylist. I just loved it. I love it. Stylistics, and also too, what you call was on that show, the Delphonics from Philadelphia. They were on that show too. So let's do this, huh? Okay, we ready to do this, family? Let's do this.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie. On Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
And I'm so proud, yeah. You and me, girl, go a long way back. Yeah, we go a long way back.
I remember when loving you wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, baby. But I stuck on in there with you, and we made it. Sugar, we made it. Through it all. Now let's keep it up. Cause I ain't had enough. No, no.
You and me, girl.
Go a long way back. Such a long, 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 long way.
Hey, you and me, girl.
Yeah, girl.
Go a long way back.
Yeah, yeah. We go a long way back. And I know you remember when trying to love me wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, baby. But you stuck on in there with me, and you see what? We made it. Just you and me, and we love each other so.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah. Bloodstone, long way back. Go on and cry, my son. Cry till your tears are done. I know it's hard for you to see that it really wasn't meant to be, but you'll find love again. Maybe the next time you'll win. I tell you, you know, I can't sing. That's for real, okay? I'm just tripping. But, you know, I always wanted to be a dramatic. Me and my buddy Rick Johnson.
You are considered, we're the sixth, then seventh dramatics. Yeah, man. So, if you want to get in on this conversation, brothers and sisters, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah. Talking about misgivings. And I know some of our callers are probably on the road or up in the air, you know, getting ready for to be with the family. And like I said, that's a beautiful thing, man. Family's beautiful. And, you know, because of the ability to move different areas, you know, transportation, you know, this is maybe the one time that you can be with family, you know. Good afternoon, Baba Butch.
OG.
Hey, what's up, my brother? How you doing, Baba?
Your program is like I'm out in the middle of the desert. Your program keeps me connected to my folks.
Right on. I appreciate that. I'll do my best, my brother.
I live a stone's throw from the Sandia reservation.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I was up on the reservation. We call it the res out here. I was up on the res yesterday. And it's amazing. When I leave the culture of New Mexico proper and go to the res, I'm home.
That's beautiful. I say, right on. You feel good.
And the people mm-hmm. the people on the res, they are really slowly but surely, they're gaining back their self-respect and their culture.
Good. They're growing.
I talk to them quite a bit because I ride my horse, mm-hmm. not my horse, but I ride horses to the reservation, which okay. is a stone's throw from where I'm at. Mm-hmm. But I have turned on a couple of the brothers and a few of them sisters up there with your program. There's one young lady, she does security on mm-hmm. the res.
Okay.
She goes to the university. She's a college girl. She's going for a law degree. And she tells me how she has to walk around because there's dead spots on the res. You know, it's a big place, huge. You know, it's a resort, the whole nine. What's his name was out here a couple of months ago. I knew him when he was a kid. This cat, the rapper, he's in a detective series now. He's been DI or so, I don't know. I don't keep up with that mess. You know who he is.
Not Ice-T.
No, hell no. No, the other one. The other. I forget, yeah.
Yeah,
the other
I know what
one.
You're talking
he's
about.
Not
I
a guy.
Got you. Yeah.
And he knows what's going on. He's from Queens. He's from Hollis. I can't think of his name right now.
I know where the Congo, where the Kango hats. He's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't mm-hmm. I forget these guys, because they were kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this young lady was telling me today, yesterday I went up there. And she was telling me how she's been, you know, in and out with the broadcast because, you know, they're dead spots. See, the res is right in the mountain,
okay.
Sandia Mountain. All the mountain, all of that is theirs.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing a tremendous job, and they find your program, because I turn everybody on that will listen, because the black folks out there that I've, some of you know, and I told them about the program, and they listen to it a couple of times, and, you know, they just like, chucked to the side, but the natives,
okay,
the people on the res, they tune you in. They're probably listening to you now.
Right on. I appreciate that. Thank you, brother.
Because
you,
their brother. Struggle was revitalized during the 60s when King and all of them was fighting for, you know, the vote and all this kind of stuff. That's what Dennis Banks, all of them, all of these people. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to pass that on to you. I don't take up your time because I'm waiting for Paul to come in to give me. I'm always waiting for Paul to give me his annual report from across the pond.
Right on, brother.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But all I can tell you, man, we love you out here.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that,
you
Baba.
Your research is fantastic because a lot of things that I've forgotten about, listening to you, you know, bring back different things. Like you brought up the young lady that wrote the book on, what's it called again?
Urugu.
Urugu, see, yeah. I remember her.
Yeah.
She was a student of Juan Henry Clark.
Exactly. Exactly.
I remember her. I think her name was Harris or something before that.
Well, Richards. Donna Richards. Her name was Donna Richards. Now it's Marimba
Ani.
Last
time I seen Donna Richards up in person, I don't know her. She used to come to the First World every Saturday morning with, I think, her daughter, little daughter at that time. It was back, but, I'm starting to remember. I forgot about a lot of these people, but what was I getting ready to say?
Well, you know, Baba, I tell you, I know, I thank you, and I know LL Cool J. That's what we were trying to think of.
That's
LL Cool J. Yeah, trying to think of. Thanks, you too, dear brother. I appreciate you, man.
That's a brother now. LL Cool J. But like I said, see what they do? They smoke you. All of them come in. They come in and do a sound check because most of them, they flying in on private jets. They come in. They don't go anywhere. They go to the resort, check the sound check, go to their room, relax, do the show. That night, they go back to Sunport, get on the jet, and they're gone. They're not even here over 12 hours.
Right.
None of them.
Right.
Now, I grew up with little Anthony and the Imperials. We went to high school with Anthony Gordon, the Imperials. They came through. I hadn't seen that. I graduated in 58. I haven't seen little Anthony once since I graduated from high school.
Okay.
He popped up out here with the Imperials to do, a little one-night show, a little one-nighter. And I went to the stage entrance, they got it all roped off, out here. They're a big celebrity. Back, see, I knew these people from the projects, Fort Greene.
Right
Brooklyn,
on. That's right.
I said, tell him, he said he didn't know who I was. I said, well, tell him, I said, who called him? I used to call him Gordine, son of Sardine. His name is Anthony Gordine.
Oh, okay.
He said, I got to know this cat. Let him in.
Right on. Good.
I went backstage, and he freaked out. He lives in Las Vegas now. But listen, all I can tell you, man, you got some listeners out here on the reservation, on the red. They live on the red.
Right on, Baba.
That's home.
Right on, Baba.
So,
thank you so much.
I'm going to let you go. I love you, man.
I love you, too.
And keep doing what you're doing and stay strong.
Hey, Baba, there's a phrase. Yeah. It's in the mail. You know what I'm talking about? It's in the mail.
No, I ain't sweating now. I know that's coming. I'm not even sweating now.
Hey, it's in the mail, okay?
When you got back to me and asked me for the official address, I know it was on its way, so don't sweat that.
All right, dear brother. Love you, man.
Take care of yourself.
You too.
Take care of yourself.
Yes, sir.
Take care. Make sure yourself is your priority.
Yes, sir. Because
you can't do this without that.
Right on. Well, listen, you have a great weekend,
talk to you
okay?
Later, get Paul on there.
All right, brother. Have a great weekend. Peace to
later.
You. All right, Baba Butch, man. Good man. Yeah. He knew Roger Brown. Yeah, he talks about Roger Brown. Roger Brown was cold playing in Indiana Pacers. Yeah. Yep. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, caller. Good afternoon. Okay. Good afternoon, Brother Kwaku. How you doing?
Doing well, brother. How are you?
I'm well, man. I'm well.
Yeah, I was seeing Bob Butch, man. I wanted to catch up when he supposed to call me, but he didn't.
Okay, well, he'll do it. He'll do it now because he's listening. So, Brother Baba Butch, you hear him. Give Brother Kwaku a call. Yeah.
Got all some other stuff, but I ain't going to never forget you. So, the call is coming. Don't worry about it.
All right. Yeah. I appreciate this day. I always look forward to this day. Because I always broadcast on a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And of course, Thanksgiving is always on a Thursday. So I've been doing this now for well over 10 years. And, you know, just trying to enlighten our people. And I appreciate all those who spread the word and, you know, who contact other people. You know, because that's how Baba Butch got on. That was through Kamal Kamban, you know. That's how he got on. And that article, I'm sending him that article that was in Mirmar newspaper, you know, so he's going to get that for sure. A tribute to Dr. Kamal Kamban and his family in Ghana. Yeah. So, you know, it's an interesting weekend. I have good memories of Thanksgivings of past with family and so forth. Probably the most memorable one when I was probably, how old was I? Less than 10 years old, because I just looked at the game. I thought the game was 63, but the game was like 62, 1962 Thanksgiving. My mother's friend, Christine, her husband was Ted. And Ted was a good dude, sharp dude. He drank a lot, unfortunately, but even as an alcoholic, man, he wasn't belligerent and mean-spirited. He was still cool, you know. And so I was by their house, and they had daughters. And, you know, I had played with them a lot when we were really small. But I was like, I'm going to go sit here with Ted and watch this football game. The Green Bay Packers and the Detroit Lions, the annual Thanksgiving Day game. And the Green Bay Packers, oh, man, the Green Bay Packers at that time in the 60s, when Vince Lombardi came there, oh, smoking cats, they were the toughest team. But that day, the Detroit Lions just whooped that ass. They sacked Bart Starr, I would venture to say, damn near 10 times. Man, yeah. Roger Brown, Alex Karras, yeah, Mike Schmidt, yeah. The Detroit Lions just whooped the Packers' ass that day. And today, tomorrow, they're going to play the Bears, and the Packers are going to play Miami. And you know, well, some years later, the Cowboys got a Thanksgiving, so you know, they had two games. So the Cowboys. Then, of course, they threw the night game on, and that's this year. The Packers are playing that in the evening in Green Bay. And so it's going to be chilly. So I wonder how the Dolphins will fare. I hope they don't fare well. And so the Cowboys started playing the second game. And remember some good Cowboy games, too. Yeah. So, football. Yeah. So, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. There's a number you'll be in the queue if you want to give a question, a comment, or a concern, or whatever. Hit star twice. You know. Yeah. I look forward to Brother Paul, too. And all the other callers, the people who call in, Jay, and, yeah, you know, all the brothers and sisters, Rick. We don't hear too much from Rick, but he's listening, as he's always told me. He's out there, you know. And I was surprised because Brother Kwaku, who, you know, he's told me, he said, yeah, man, you got listeners, man. He goes to what he calls the back room. He said, you got listeners. Not everybody, not just the people that call. You got people just or online or whatever, yeah. So that's great to know. But I would do what I'm doing and say what I'm saying regardless. You know, regardless. Yeah. So Friday, we'll kind of be open Friday, but we'll talk about Black Friday, you know, and how that came about. Now, one of the things was the frustration that these Philadelphia police officers were having for the next day because they had big sales that were happening in downtown Philly, I guess, and all the traffic and so forth. But they didn't call that Black Friday. We used to call Friday the 13th Black Friday, you know, in our community. If it was Friday the 13th, that's Black Friday, and we community people come together and potluck, you know, and somebody would bring a mirror that they could break. Because all of the superstitions, you know, that Europeans have, you know, and to make us have, you know. Because there was a TV show called Friday the 13th, as well as a movie, if y'all can remember, back in, I think, the 80s. Friday the 13th, you know. And, of course, they all got the macabre-ass horror stuff going on. Yeah. But Friday the 13th, so what we did, got together, people who knew, who could present poetry, could sing, could play instruments and so forth. It was just a coming together of our people. And, you know, maybe you might have a ladder there that people can walk under a ladder. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, on Friday the 13th, which is trestidicophobia, the fear of the number 13. Of course, the number 13 is the number of transformation. You know, we'll talk about that in, next month during Kwanzaa, because Kwanzaa uses the number 13, trestidicophobia. You know, the seven principles of Kwanzaa and the 5C, 7 plus 5, you know, it's 12 plus you, it's 13. Yeah. That's right, he's here, ladies and brothers and sisters and ladies and gentlemen. Our good brother from across the pond, Brother Paul, how you doing?
Baba Ochi, how are you today?
I am doing well, man. Baba Butch is listening and waiting for you, man, to drop some of that knowledge,
Baba,
some of that
Ochi,
wisdom.
I tell you, that man is a beautiful man,
yes,
man.
Yes, he is.
Because I tell you what.
Yes, he is.
You know, you've never met somebody in the physical, but you meet them in the spiritual, right?
And yeah.
When that man talks, I tell you what, right? I'm over 4,000 miles away, but it's so uplifts my soul. It's so inspires my spirit. It makes me whole. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. You know, I don't want us ever to forget how special we are as a people. We're
right.
A very special people. Unfortunately, we're walking around and enough of us don't remember. We don't really know how special we are. We are so special, man. And it's just those little things are so beautiful, man. I'm telling you, man. And that's the sort of person I am. Those things mean so much to me. Even that acknowledgement. That acknowledgement means so much
yes,
to me.
Yes, I agree.
Man. I swear.
I agree.
It really does.
Just
it
as
absolutely
he,
does.
Just as he said to me that he has gone to the reservations where our indigenous
absolutely.
People live, and said he has spread my program, and many people are listening there. And, yeah, you know, it's beautiful, man, I tell you. You know, and of course.
Yeah, yeah, he's a free spirit, and he's living his life to the fullest. And,
yes, he is.
And you can, the way he's able to just acknowledge like that, it just demonstrates he's living his life to the fullest. And, you know, Baba Ochi, it just reminds me how much of our communication, you know what I'm trying to say? This is what I'm trying to say, Baba Ochi. Our communication, you know, we can point fingers here. We can point fingers here. We can strive for this. We can strive for that. We can achieve anything. But if we don't communicate, what's the point? If we're not able to communicate, even on whatever level, I don't really understand the point. What is the point in me having £1 million in the bank, right? And just die with £1 million in the bank, and that's it. I don't see no point in that.
Mm-hmm.
Make no sense to me.
Right.
You understand?
Right.
You know. Today, I went into. I had. I finished my work, and I had two things to do. I had to go to the post office and go to the bank. Yeah, I went to the post office and I collected some money on behalf of somebody. And when I was coming out, I saw a man who I've seen before. He was kind of watching me. And I've seen him around begging for money, kind of, you know, he's always walking around begging for money. But he's quite noticeable because he's got, you know, when your legs, we call it in Jamaica, they call it bandy legs. I don't know what you call it.
Okay.
you know, when the legs, you know, look like you've been riding a horse and they go to the side. Legs, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, bow legs.
Bow legs, yeah. We call it bandy legs in Jamaica, legs, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've seen him about, and they are extremely, you know, I mean, I always wondered, because usually at birth, people get those done as a child, so you don't really see a lot of that again.
Right. No, not anymore. Not anymore. You do see it a little bit, but that's for children who didn't maybe have the healthcare or the access to the healthcare that they could have gotten as an infant to correct that problem. You're right. You're right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. In the 70s, I think I used to see it a lot, but you don't really see it a lot now. But he has that. Anyway, so when I've come out the post office, yeah, I see him kind of watching me, and I'm thinking, I did think in my head, because I've seen him around begging for money. But other people were coming out, and he never asked none of them. So I kind of dismissed that. But as I came out the bank, He said, brother, have you got some money? Have you got some change you can spend? I laughed. I said, brother, I saw you watching me, you know. But I said, I saw you watch everybody come out. And you, why you choose me? You know? So I just had to laugh about it, because I'm thinking, everybody else come out, and it's like he's waiting for me.
Right.
So I said, bro. He said, oh, brother, I just need some money, you know, to buy some food. Anyway. Yeah. We got in the. So I said, "How much you want?" So he said, "Tenner." He said, "I said £10." I said, "You want £10?" I said, "Bro, come on, man." I said, "Oh, look, I'll meet you halfway." So I gave him a fiver anyway.
Okay.
So, but I personally can't. I never walk away from them people. I always give them something.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm always gonna give them something. You know what I mean? If you have to beg for money, you're in a worse position than I am. You know what I mean?
Well, let me say this, because here is a lot of. A lot of homelessness, people sleeping on the street, under the expressways and so forth. A lot of it, people stopping you.
That.
I do too, stopping you at when there's a stop sign on busy places, you know, asking for money. And so if I can reach in my pocket, give them a dollar or two. How much is £5? £5 is...
I think, I don't know how much the pound is to the dollar, but it used to be, say, you might be £1 might yield about 60 cents or 70 cents, something like that. So okay. I suppose it's about $2.50
maybe. I'm not sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, the pound has more worth than the dollar. And so last time I've seen, I don't know, it might have been changed. Maybe the dollar now has more worth than the pound. I'm not sure. But last I seen where they... A pound was a dollar worth $1.25. So, then the U.S. dollar.
Wow. Yeah. Well, then if that's the case, I've been, you know, I don't really look at the foreign exchange again. I used to, but not anymore. But wow, I'm shocked if that's the case.
Yeah. Well, but, check and see if it's correct, because I know at one time it was, you know, and in fact, the pound and the dollar were pretty much equivalent, you know. But,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to have to look at that. But I gave him the money. Yeah. We got chatting. We got talking. And he's telling me that he live in a place. He can't get his money. They don't give him his money. I think he's got some drink problems. I think he went into some mental institution. Anyway, we got talking. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I used to do that kind of work where I used to help these people legally. So I said, you know, it's funny you chose me, because it's almost as if you knew, and we got talking, and he says, look, I've been in this position for 15 years. I'm saying, what, 15 years? 15 years? He said, yeah, according to him. I don't know how much of it is true. So I said, look, bro, I said, tomorrow I'm off, right? I said, what I can do for you, I'll meet you at the library, right? And we'll go through it, whatever, and I'll see what I can do. Because I used to do that work. I told him, you know what I mean? And I see how I can help you, you know what I mean? So anyway, we were speaking there for about half an hour, and I left him. All right. But, you know, I did think, I actually missed the bank. I missed the bank. He caused me to miss my thing with the bank. But, you know, I left there, and I came, and I said, oh, I'm going to go home. And I came home, and I tuned on to you, and I heard that from Baba Butch. Look, the reality of it is the reason why I say this, sometimes... Well, this is my strong knowledge of myself, is that the ancestors work in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
I always know that they you're being tested. I feel I'm being tested always. You know what I mean? That boy, that man, he he watched everybody go past, you know. And I don't know him from Adam, but he told, and I had to laugh. I said, bro, why are you choosing me? But even he don't know. But the reality of it is, this is a test. How can I be talking what I talk on the radio or talking and not help my people when I know
That's
they need
right.
help?
That's
you know
right.
what I mean? And yeah. I don't know. You know, that £5 he might take to drink. I mean, he didn't smell of drink or anything. And he told me he's trying to clean up his act. You know, the brother looks well older than me. It turns out he's 42. You know what I mean? And I'm like, bro, you know what I mean? What's going on? So, you know, tomorrow I'm going to meet him. I'm going to see what we can do, if I can help him.
Right on.
You know.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Right you know on. What I mean? And, you know, I have things to do tomorrow. But I'm going to make that time, because the reality of it is, how can I, and I question myself, how can I be talking all this talk and not really, you know, walk the walk? You know, sometimes our people just need some communication is what I'm saying. They just need somebody in their corner sometimes.
Sure.
Just, you know, I'm kind of strong like that. I can talk to these people. Like, I'm not going to take what they say lightly. I'm going to challenge them. I come from, I have a legal background, so they can't get away with just waffling me so easy. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, He chose the right person, but it still amazes me why he let everybody walk past and chose me.
He got you,
but
man.
The ancestors, man. That's it's right. the ancestors, you know. And it's like they're testing you. They're testing you to see if you're real. Is just the waffle you're spinning, or are you really there to help our people?
Right.
You know. And sometimes it's not the help we think it is. Sometimes it's just communication, just listening to that person and making that person understand something. So. It's communication we're lacking in a big way, man, is what I'm saying, Baba. We lack that kind of communication. You know, I mean, we're kind of frightened of each other now, and it bothers me, man. It bothers me how we're so frightened of each other, frightened to engage with each other. Yeah, sometimes it don't go right. Sometimes they're lying. Sometimes they're not. But the reality of it is we do need help, man.
Yeah,
we need help.
Yeah, we need each other. Yes.
We do.
Especially in these systems we live in, because these systems are not ours, man. You know, we definitely, you know, we live here in America and as well as there. Oh, by the way, the exchange rate now, the dollar, the £1 equals $1.27. $1.27 now. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, one time the pounds, for a moment, the British pound was worth more than the U.S. dollar. But check this out. You know, we need each other. We need to support one another. We live in capitalist society, which is particularly in this stage of Trump and so forth. They want to get rid of everything to help members of society who are less fortunate. What are they going to do? You know, more begging, more robberies, more jackings. All of those kinds of things are going to happen because people don't have. A lot of people don't have. And then they're talking about here, they're talking about a lot of government jobs. Most of us are employed by the government, either a city, a state, or federal government. And they're going to be cutting these jobs. What are we going to do? You know? Yeah, it's going to be interesting these next few years, Brother Paul. We'll have some good conversation. And I know that you'll be analyzing and looking at it. And, you know, and I look forward to your perspective.
But. You know, Baba Ochi, you know, you ask what are you're going to do. I don't live in America yet. But I what I do know, and I know this 1,000,000%, that the African in America should never ask himself what he's going to do. The African in America is always going to find something to do. Always. You know, I don't even have that. The thought what comes to mind, you know, when the African had nothing, he used his voice. And he created blues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he sung. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He had nothing. Nothing. He wasn't given shit. You had sharecropping, Jim Crow. He used his voice. The power of his inner voice, he knew himself. The problem is, if you ask yourself, remove ourselves from not knowing ourselves. That's where the problem is. It's not about these people, Baba Ochi. It's not about their systems. It's about the knowledge of self.
Right.
We have in our DNA, we can achieve anything, Baba Ochi. Anything. We don't have to rely on their systems. We don't. You see, this is how they've tricked us. They have given us the idea. Look, look, Baba Ochi, you talk about K-9 in the pyramids. My strong evidence shows me that mm-hmm. they were using them pyramids for energy. They don't want to talk about this. You know that those pyramids were lined with lime on the outside, limestone. Right. You know that, don't
exactly,
you?
Exactly.
Bro, and there was water run underneath it. You know mm-hmm. that as well, right. don't you?
Yes.
Right. And the pyramid structure concentrates energy. The three pyramids, right, they point to the star system of Orion. Am I lying?
Right. Orion's belt in the stars.
Right.
Yeah, that's why they're curved. That's why they're curved and not in a straight line. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. They point to the star system of Orion. Now, what a star? A star, like our sun, is a nuclear energy. It gives off energy. That's what the sun does. It's a nuclear reactor. That's what the sun is. Mm-hmm. Look, these people have tricked us, man. That's why we need to wake up. They've fooled us so much. They've made us believe that, all these things have created is some new stuff. Listen, we were taking energy from the planet and the star system. We were doing that. They've conned us. They've totally... Even Marcus Garvey said that. He said they're bluffing you.
Yeah.
Look, you can find the recordings on there. He said they are bluffing you. That's what they're doing. They take us to their schooling fooling systems between the age of 1 and 7 when the programming gets imprinted on your mind. Yeah. That's the most... For us, that's the most dangerous times. When we hand over our children to them, that's what we do.
Yeah.
Between the ages 1 and 7, they're finished.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone tells me. It doesn't matter what you achieve. You're finished. They have got your mind. Okay? That's where they put their print in. We should never hand over our children between those ages to these people.
Right.
Never.
Because they're the most impressionable ages.
Now, even Malcolm X told us. Malcolm X told us the same thing.
That's right.
Malcolm X told us.
Yes. Giving your children over to your oppressor to educate them.
Oh, I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Right. And even when we woke up and realized, what did they do? When we woke up, because, you know, when there was a time when we even knew, even the people who so-called weren't educated, they overstood these things. Mm-hmm. They overstood these things. They did. They did. Right. So what I'm saying is, right, we've been tricked and hoodwinked and fooled.
That's right.
So we don't need to ask ourselves what we're going to do. We're going to do. Those people who ask themselves what they're going to do, they're lost in time. They need help. They need uplifting. Come on and talk about politics and this is what Donald Hitler, the Mussolini, Trump, the dump's going to do and all this nonsense. Listen, it doesn't matter. Also, what they're trying to do, they're failing. And they're going to fail because we, in our inside, that's where our strength comes from.
That's right.
And we were made for this world.
That's right. In our DNA.
So I don't. We don't have. We gotta change. Look, Baba Ochi, you know, you 1,000,000% know this, and I'm just reminding you that we have to change our mindsets and mm-hmm. stop looking to these people for our solutions.
Thank you.
They are not our solutions.
No, they're not. And you see, based upon many, many years and many times that they have said something and did otherwise. They have said they said they were going to do something positive, and it turns out negative because that's who they are and that's how they are. It'll never happen here for us. And so our mindset has to change. We have to embrace ourselves. We have to close ranks, pull our resources, and do for ourselves. Do for ourselves.
Right.
I remember reading about Father Divine, and Daddy Grace. These were two ministers, yes. Christian ministers, Father Divine during the Depression. The people who followed Father Divine during the Depression did well because he had them as a group to support one another. He had them as a group to share in the work. You know, they had meals. They had work. I mean, you know, they had the ability to support one another. And that's what we must have, particularly now in these upcoming trying times. Now, I understand that the economics of then and now are totally something different because the economic is way out of whack, you know, way out of whack. When you have a few individuals who have billions of dollars, billions, and then there's some with millions of dollars at the expense of us. And our situation here economically is, I don't know about the UK, but I know about it here. Because like when they talk about middle class, I'm going to do something. And that's what kind of bothered me about Kamala Harris's campaign. She kept talking about the middle class to American people. To Caucasians, the middle class is might be damn near 200,000. But for us, the middle class ain't nothing but $80,000, $90,000 a year. It's a total different situation. Because this economy and this system is not for us. It never has been, and it never will be, you know? So it's a different situation, and it's going to get rough. It's going to get tough, you know?
You know, Ochi, whenever I heard this idea about economics, and on this side of the pond, I used to say this on the radio, and I used to, and I know still people are still going to think the same way. I used to say, because I had to think about this. I always heard this from people contributing on in the UK. Oh, we need to get our economics right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't study economics. In school, I did. In school, a very low level, they give us an idea of what economics is. But I then went and bought books because I need to understand what are they talking about. They keep mentioning economics. And sometimes I've always been one to question people. And these people come in and talk about economics. You question them. And then most of the times when they answer you, to me, no disrespect to anyone, they don't really know what they're talking about. So when I have to go to a book, and I had to look at what are the principles of economics? What is this thing they call economics? Who gave this name and title, economics? Now, most of these people, that's the first question you ask them. You say, where did the name of economics come from? And they can't tell you. That just straight away tells me they're just regurgitating something. Just like you're in a church, someone comes and says to you this thing about God, and you just keep repeating it. But when someone asks you, what is God? What's it? They can't even tell you what that is. Like this guy on the radio the other day, he calls himself a pastor. I said to him, listen, bro, when did the people come to the earth? And he start waffling and all kind of nonsense. I says, well, Adam and Eve were real. Rubbish! Nonsense! I don't want to hear that crap. You ain't got evidence to support it, or you can't give a logical argument. I can't hear it. So what I'm saying is, you get a book and you read. And you realize one of the gurus in economics is Adam Smith. Most of these principles they follow.
Okay.
Adam Keynesian Smith. Keynesian economics.
Yeah.
I'm not pretending to be an economics expert, right? It's written in the book, Keynesian economics. You know, Adam Smith came from Scotland, by the way. Yeah.
Okay.
So you start to read what it is. One of the things he said, when governments start printing money, what they call, they give this technical name called quantitative easing. He said, the next stage is war. That's what he said. He made a statement saying that. So I said, okay, what does he mean by that? Because it means that when countries like America, who prints the most money? It's the Federal Reserve, America. They print the most money. Because what it means is that the war, it's not happening. That's what it translates at. It means that nothing's happening. All their plans, business and everything, it's not working. That's what it really means, right. Translates as in common man's terms. So they start just printing money. They've got a printing machine. And because America is the only reserve currency, they can do that.
Right.
So they're printing money. And what they are trying to achieve in terms of business is bringing back in the money. And they've got international businesses. They can set up franchises here, right? They don't even have to ask our permission. They just come and set these franchises up. So they should. Why aren't they working? Let me tell you why they ain't working, yeah? Let me show you why they're not working. And what Donald Trump said is total crap. It's a simple reason why they're not working. Because of man's greed.
Greed,
man's
brother.
Greed. That's why they're not working. Because what they've been doing, instead of taking the money and investing back in the people, they've been stealing the money.
Yeah.
Stealing people's pensions, stealing people's pensions. That's what they've been doing.
Yeah.
All these big finance people, Elon Musk is the PayPal. Look, go online and look at a video called The PayPal Mafia. That's the company he formed, Elon Musk. He was robbing people. One of the people he robbed was me.
The PayPal Mafia.
Robbing people.
Okay.
That PayPal had no status in no country. They were taking people's money and robbing them. That's how they got that status. So what I'm saying is, the reason why the system is collapsing, because these big fishes have been robbing the public of their pensions and everything else. That's what's happening, okay? And now they're trying to cover it up. They're trying to cover it up. So they're happy to have a war, because they need to kill off the creditors. That's another thing Adam Smith said about killing off the creditors. The creditors are the public. They're the one who pay their taxes. They're the one who keep uphold the system. When those banks failed, they took the money from the public. But it's not the public who made them banks fail. It was the people at the top who made them banks fail. Right. Because of their greed. They were gambling your money and they stole it. Okay? So what I'm saying is, when the people come to me about this economics talk, I'm thinking, bro, listen to me. Economics is a pseudoscience made by these people to keep us poor. Mm-hmm. When they go to Africa, they take their government people, bring them back to England and America,
right, and
teach
they train
them economics.
Them.
And what do
exactly.
They do? They go back to their countries and rob their countries.
Yes.
That's what they do.
That's what they do.
Mm-hmm. That's what they do. And then countries get worse and worse and worse. So don't give me a crap about economics. And how comes no African has come to us and told us, what's our strategy for getting up there? Just keep you regurgitating these European terms like you're brainwashed or out of your damn mind. Okay, mm-hmm. This is why I'm saying we don't think. We're not even thinking about nothing. We're not using our minds. And I tell you what, we have the best minds on the planet, but they have dumbed us down, just like they've done us down with the churches and the mosques. They've totally dumbed us down.
Their systems. Their systems are debilitating.
We have the ability to do anything on the planet and other planets too.
Yeah,
that's the reality, Baba Ochi.
That's
the reality.
All right, Brother Paul. Man, I appreciate you, man. You know, I really do. Thank you for your comments. And your passion. I appreciate you. I hope to talk with you on Friday, my man. All right, Paul.
Brother, you're beautiful people, and I really do appreciate you just giving me the time to speak the truth. Thank you.
Right
Take
on.
Care.
Peace. Good afternoon, my sister. How you doing?
Oh, free the land. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you.
Good, good. And I've been enjoying the program, and I appreciate all the insights from everyone and of the Green, and appreciate Brother Paul. And, you know, I was just, you know, calling, you know, we just, in regards to our brother, freedom fighter, son of a great freedom fighter, you know, about Mayor Chokwe Lumumba mm-hmm. being indicted.
Oh, really? The mayor of Jackson, yes, Mississippi?
Yes. You know, I'm
didn't
sure
about
yes,
it.
Him. Cause you know, yeah. Chokwe Lumumba is, you know, his father was a legendary
I knew his
fighter.
Father, you know.
Yeah, and his son came to be, you know, Chokwe, besides all the other great things he did as a Pan-Africanist leader
uh-huh.
and revolutionary, his son was also, you know, with the Malcolm X grassroots movement and, you know, one. He's like my godson to me. He's really wonderful. He became the mayor
uh-huh.
of, he's out in Mississippi, Jackson.
Okay.
Right. And so just recently they have indicted him on some trumped up charges, you know, trying to accuse him of bribery and just the FBI, you know, they're targeting him because of all his revolutionary work that he was doing to help mm-hmm. liberate the people there and, you know, counteract all the racist
tendencies
and takeover that they were taking up.
Yeah, I'm going to try to find information about that.
I'm going to send you information. Okay. I have information. His sister, Rashida, she is another freedom fighter. She's a lawyer, attorney. They got mm-hmm. attorneys and lawyers. Chokwe had his son and his daughter.
Right.
And she's beautiful. And so she sent out some information that, you know, in support for him. And they're working on some things what we can do in support of fighting for his, you know, support and liberation.
Okay.
And she, I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you just in a few minutes. And they're wanting to get the story, the true story of what, you know, what is the truth about the situation. And they have, you've heard of News One? Mm-hmm. It's some literature called, I mean, a paper or something called News One?
No.
Anyway.
I remember News One being on, not on BET, but.
Yeah,
Kathy
I think
Hughes.
It was. I think it was something like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so okay. they have an outlet, and her position was that they have a lot of, you know, they can get a lot of information sent to a lot of people using that as a vehicle.
Sure, sure.
Sure.
And so she was asking us to send support and also to show that people are, you know, that they are reading and viewing the News One. And she said that in turn will help get the words out. And that was one of their first signs that they're trying to do for our brother.
Okay.
And I'll send that to you and then we can send it because she wants it sent to, you know, our other like Facebook and some other institutions like that.
Okay.
So I wanted to spread that out. I'm just, you know, it's devastating how, you know, they go and attack us and then try to incarcerate us.
Sure. It's what they do. It's how they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
And I wanted to say a shout out to that young brother, that Warrior King. He's a Warrior King. He's, you know, revolutionary like his dad.
Right on. Yeah, Chakwe Lumumba was a tough brother.
Wasn't he tough?
Yeah. He was a tough brother. Good, tall in stature, man. Wearing his African clothes, being an attorney. Oh, he's a tough brother.
The attorney.
Yeah, I can remember when I met him. You know, I don't know if it was at a in Cobra or something. He was standing strong. He was standing tall. You know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know. Yes. He was a true visionary, and he's, you know, helped out with the Malcolm X grassroots movement and Pan African.
Yeah.
But he's just really great, and and someone's following his footsteps. So we're gonna all, and there's some planning stages of what we're gonna, other things we're gonna do. His sister is doing that in Malcolm. So we'll be sending out for, you know, people that would give us support. Mayor Chokwe, brother, son, Chokwe Lumumba.
Right on.
And Tar. Yeah.
All right, my sister, you have a good and blessed weekend. And, you know, you be safe out there. Okay.
Did you send out information or speak? I didn't get right at the beginning. Speak about what Mama Marimba does every year about Thanksgiving.
I did that piece. I read that piece and talked about that at the beginning of the program. So, yeah.
I stated that Mama Marimba is right on it.
Oh yeah, she's on it. Oh, I love it. I have to read it every, you know, the day before of misgivings.
Misgivings. She's got the most outstanding critique in the truth about the treacherous so-called holiday. You know, so I love that. So Sante for that, too.
All right.
Okay, well, you have a blessed weekend, too.
You too. You too, my sister. Hope to hear your voice on Friday, okay? Peace to you.
Oh, yeah, Friday, yeah. So yeah. Good.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out. And they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shimhotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahardie. Bibi Fahardie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Enjoy your day tomorrow. Enjoy your family. Or whatever you do. Hope to see you on Friday. Peace. Thank you.